Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Flesh and Blood and Bone podcast. I am filmmaker Kira Gardner, and this is my dad, Tony.
I'm Tony.
And that's Tony Gardner, special effects makeup
person,
best dad, just all around great human being. Yeah, I know. We're really complimentary today on this episode. We're both running on not a lot of sleep, so we apologize in advance. I wanted to dress up more for this episode as well, but this is what you get. And today, we are talking about the 1992 film Sleepwalkers, which is a Stephen King film directed by Mick Garris, and it was the first Stephen King thing that was written for the screen. It wasn't a novel then adapted to a movie. So my dad had lots of effects to do in this, lots of gore, lots of cat aliens. I still don't understand what they are. We'll just try and go chronologically through what they did on the film, and he can talk to us about how the experience was, if he fell in love with any of the cats on set. Really also what it was like to work with Mick Garris and Machen Amick and all those lovely things. So,
and for the people watching, if you see us gazing this way, we're actually watching the movie.
Yes. Anytime
here while we're talking about it.
Yes. Every episode, my laptop's open so that we can see the movie being played on the laptop so that we don't forget anything important. Just so you know, if you're watching this on YouTube, which I hope you are. But yeah, this is 1992, so you had already done Addams Family, and then you jump on to Sleepwalkers?
That is correct. Mick Garris asked us to do Sleepwalkers.
How did that come about?
I believe, if chronological memory serves, we had done
Psycho 4.
Psycho 4 prior to this. And had a really good experience with him, and wanted to do it again.
On Psycho 4, I think we didn't do a whole episode on it because it was just Mrs. Bates, correct? Like, it was a little...
Yeah, there were like some deaths, like arsenic poisoning and stuff like that, and Mrs. Bates' stuffed body in different stages, but that was pretty much it on that.
Yeah, we can revisit that, but that's how you two met.
Well, we met back on Thriller.
Oh, Jesus.
He's a friend of Rick Baker's, and Mick was one of the zombies in Thriller along with me. We, in the very end scene where there's like six or seven of us in the room coming at Ola Ray, Mick's one of the other zombies in the room with me.
Right.
So we hung out a lot, and we just had a similar sense of humor and liked each other. And then when Mick started directing and stuff, and he had little things to do like Psycho 4, I'd come on for stuff like that. And then Sleepwalkers was the first one that was like a giant laundry list of stuff to do. And it was really fun.
I thought they just did like the cat people, but you guys did everything.
Yeah, all the gore.
Did you have a good budget, like, or was it a really crazy limitation?
It wasn't like a really great budget, but it gave us enough money to do stuff like fake heads of the sheriff and fake arms on Ron Perlman that, you know, were jointed and could bend and fingers could break and stuff like that. And then the full body suits on people. In our original budget, actually, the full body suits were, they're like 8 foot tall.
Oh my God.
People, like, the idea was to use somebody around 5 feet tall and then add 2 feet with leg extension so they had like a cat leg, since these are supposed to be cat creatures.
Oh.
And then add more height to the head with the animatronic head of the of the creature.
That'd be so cool. Why?
So the idea was they were bigger and more imposing. And then I don't remember who decided it, but they decided that they didn't want to do the leg extensions, I think because they didn't want to have to deal with any wire work.
Why would there be wire work?
Just to hang the people from wires so they could walk on the legs and not have to put their weight on it so they could run really fast. That was the way that we had presented it to them. And that way we could make really skinny lower legs and we could get something really cool and not have the bulk of like painter stilts or anything like that.
Yeah.
Taking up space. And VFX didn't really exist. So that wasn't much of an option. Anyhow, morphing and stuff was just coming into vogue, and you see it in this movie where he's in the car and
it disappears.
He's nervous and he's changing who he is and what he looks like really quickly, but it's not really quick.
It's pretty slow.
It's the beginning of morphing technology, and we had to sculpt some of the intermediate heads because the idea of digital technology going from one thing to the other didn't really exist. So it was more like flat art being changed in different shapes.
Sure.
But the creatures were supposed to be really tall and skinny. Tom Hester designed them, actually, and he's a cat buff. He's amazing with cat anatomy and anything feline. He worked on a lot of the stuff on Michael Jackson on Thriller as well, actually.
Oh, with the werewolf.
The werewolf hands and stuff like that. And yeah. And then once they vetoed it, we had the two actors in the suits that were both about 5'4". Once we killed the leg extension, suddenly we had monsters that were
very short.
5'8" with a height added on the head, and that was really it. So it didn't really make any sense anymore. But by then, we had also painted over the original paint job per the VFX department so that they could add a glow easier based on the current technology at the time, so that it looked like the creatures were always holding the essence of someone's
soul
energy, basically.
And to that I say, what glow?
I know they ended up not doing it. So you end up with very flat painted creatures. And
so that got screwed.
Yeah.
They said, hey, girl, don't do that detailed paint job. Paint over it.
The sad part is we had done the detailed paint job.
I know.
And finished it. And it looked great. It was supposed to be like they were still forming. And it was supposed to be like sort of a fetal creature where there was translucency to the skin. And you could see veins and arteries and stuff through the skin. But they still had that reptilian sort of surface texture. And then they had that sort of feline overview. So it was sort of like this amalgam of those three ideas. And it was interesting and different. And then you got rid of the long skinny aspect. They got shorter. And suddenly their heads look bigger, in my opinion, too. And then they got painted over. And I remember Brian Penicus had to pull out an air gun and actually paint over this paint job he'd spent forever doing. And I don't know if I actually caught him crying, but I think I might have. It was a really beautiful paint job, and it went away.
And then they didn't even do the VFX that they said they would.
Right.
Oh, my God, that's so sad.
And I think they had based that on, we had done Cocoon prior to that, and we did the aliens, and the aliens were always glowing, and they kept asking us to knock the detail paint job on the body down to the point where they were almost white spandex unitards entirely for those aliens, so that they could put the glow over them, and the glow would look very uniform based on the technology of the time.
Of the time, and that's a post thing, correct? That's nothing in the suit, so they were trying to do something like that and then didn't do it at all.
Right.
I love that for you.
It could have been a budget thing. I have no idea why, but
I don't know why.
But we got to do Stephen King's Tommyknockers right after this, and we used the same actress in the suit, Karen Malkus.
Who is my aunt.
Who was the Mary Monster. We used her as the Tommyknockers monster for Stephen King's Tommyknockers. And we did the leg extensions and the finger extensions and the big head and hung her from wires for like three establishing shots to show the full body.
Wow.
And then the rest of the time, she's wearing tennis shoes and she's running on ramps that were on apple boxes that were just plywood so that she would be the correct head height to Jimmy Smits, who was the guy she was fighting. And they did a whole fight scene where she's throwing Jimmy Smits and all this stuff. So we were able to show on Tommyknockers what could have been. It's just a shame that it didn't exist on this film.
So you got to eventually do what you were hoping to do, but on a different Stephen King thing.
Yeah.
That's so funny because it's like the cat creatures didn't really have that like crazy of action in this movie, and then on the next one they're like, we'll do wires and have a whole fight scene, it's fine. Interesting how that works out. I usually give a synopsis of each film so that people can know what we're talking about, but I'll be honest, I have no idea how to sum this movie up, and it takes so long, so I think you should just go watch it and then return to this if you'd like to know, and if not, you'll just like hear a lot about a lot of cats, a lot of cat creatures, limbs getting torn off, and things like that, but I have no idea, so to start, well, first of all, do you have anything to add to the front end of going into this?
No, just that it was really nice to be trusted with everything going into it to do it. And then it was just unfortunate that a couple other departments had some sway that wasn't quite thought out all the way.
Darn it.
But that's the nature of the beast. It's collaborative and give and take. And
that's the nature of the cat creature.
Yeah.
So the movie starts around this house where there's a bunch of cats in the yard and hung up dead cats. And these cops are called to investigate the crime scene.
And they're trying to figure out what happened, and nothing there makes any sense. It's an entire, weird old house, isolated house, and there's all these cats that are strung up from these trees.
Oh, right.
And then there's dead cats inside, and we had to build all these cats with intestines and stuff hanging out. And
how many fake cats did you have to make?
We had to build, like, maybe 30 of those, and then they look around and they're trying to find what caused all this. And it's like cameos with Mark Hamill, Clive Barker, and a whole bunch of people that were friends with Mick. They came in for that one day and played like medical examiners and stuff like that. And Toby Hooper's in it, and Joe Dante, and John Landis. I mean, it's just like
a party.
It's great. But they go into the house and they open a closet and a body falls out. And you think it's just an old mummified person that was the old lady who died there or whatever.
The old cat lady.
And then you realize that the body is wearing little kid's clothes and has braces. And then it's actually a girl had the soul sucked out of her. So that's kind of the setup to
the whole
how
movie.
These creatures operate, and that they attack cats and the cats hunt them and they hunt the cats. It's sort of a mutual hatred kind of thing.
I see, because they put the cat in the closet with the sucked out soul thing.
Girl. I think they just shut it in there. Yeah, I don't know.
That's interesting. Now that I think about it too, the little girl, mummified little girl in the closet has a rose over her ear, a flower. And later on, the cat mom gives Tanya a rose for her date with Charles.
Yeah.
So.
And does the same thing over the ear.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Visually, a visual connection.
So that was the tie-in between so you know it was them.
I have so many questions about the plot of this movie. First of all, why? Second of all, what the actual hell? Because literally the first scene where this guy, he carves the T of Tanya.
Into his arm.
Tanya. The way he says Tanya, the whole movie, Tanya. And then he like goes up to the girl who... this girl in the window, and I'm like, oh wow, he's standing awfully close to her, but she looks like his mother. That's sexual. And then I literally wrote in my notebook of like, why are they standing so close together? I said, why are the mother and son oddly sexual? And then literally like 5 seconds later they kiss, and I go, what, they kiss? Ew, in all capitals. So the son and the mother are together.
So they're like weird incestuous creatures that feed off of the energy of people, and they feed the energy to each other. And I think the idea was like, if he devours the soul, takes in the energy of a person,
he can share it.
He shares it with his partner that they travel the world with. And there's only so many of them left. And the way he shares it is through sex. I believe.
What? She gets fed through sex?
Yes.
Oh my God.
So the glow had a, like when they show them having sex and there's a glow, that's supposed to be the energy.
I did not understand. I didn't understand. Okay. Because yeah, the incestuous mother and son. Okay.
The whole thing, there's like so many interesting layers to it. And he's going through the yearbook in the beginning because he's basically finding the next victim. And then he poses as a student. He goes to the school and he lures people away so that he can steal their
energy.
Life energy, basically. So that he and his mom can keep going.
Also, I love when he like goes to school and he finds Tanya and he's like, okay, that's going to be the girl that I suck the energy from. When he comes back and she's like, oh, you want her instead of me or something like that. And it's really weird.
Oh.
Then they have this bit of dialogue where it's like, is she pretty? And he's like, yeah. And then she's like, is she nice? And he's like, I don't know. They just like move on. Like he knows nothing about her. It's so weird and funny. It's like so campy in a way. Oh, yes. And then Machen's parents are actually married in real life at this time.
At that time they were, yeah. And they were also the parents. I think they were Ferris Bueller's parents in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Wow. When you're just such a good married couple in real life that you play married couples in film.
I think they met on Ferris Bueller's Day Off playing a married couple. Then they got married. Then they were married when they did this.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
Wow, the first little bit of gore doesn't come in until...
Oh, Glenn Shattuck stops him, yeah, and messes with him, and Brian Krause tears his hand off.
Yes, the teacher follows the kid, what's his name, Charles, after school because he realizes that he's not actually a student there and susses it out. And so then he follows him and pulls him over. And then, his hand comes off. So here's the breakdown of the first little gag. He reaches his hand over and it's supposed to be twisted off and he pulls it off. It just kind of like explodes. That's the thing. His hand.
It's supposed to be like he twists it off and there's like an explosion of blood.
What did you do? Just sit? Did somebody just sit in the car and then explode, like have a little blood tube and splat it to the window?
Yeah, we actually didn't do the blood spraying stuff for this one. We did a stump that his hand is in and then we bloodied that up.
Okay.
And then they did the little blood explosion in the car.
I see.
And then onto the windshield. The and then we bloodied the hand that he lifted up. And then in the stump, we had some tubes so that there could be some blood running on it while he was holding it up.
So in this first little act here, we've got some cat prosthetic and cat teeth. He morphs into like a little bit. He gives a little bit of the show of the cat person. It's like it's a halfway point where he goes from a man boy man to cat prosthetics and cat teeth. How long did it take to do his cat prosthetic when it's like mid transformation?
That's just like sort of like the first step, and it's really just a forehead piece and some dentures, and John Blake did all the prosthetic applications. It was like a couple hours.
Just okay,
straightforward.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then at one point, Charles is, you know, kind of running from the cops after this kind of exchange. And he eventually outruns the cop who travels with this cat named Clovis. The attack cat is what's on his tag. Mm-hmm. And so it's like cop with, instead of a dog, has a cat, coincidentally. And in this scene where Charles is speeding from the police,
he passes him. And as he passes him, while he's moving, he's being a dick and flips him off. And then the cat pops up and he goes, shit. And now I'm on a green screen and I go between a bunch of different heads.
Oh,
because he's freaked out and caught off guard. So we sculpted like two or three different heads, and they used one of the producer's kids as one of the heads.
As the baby version.
So there's different human identities, and then there's different cat phases and stages of cat looking stuff. And then it's just a throwaway to kind of show you that what he's capable of doing. And then if he really focuses, like here where he puts the car off to the side of the road and then hides it, he's using his powers to make the car and himself disappear from the human spectrum of vision, basically. But the cat can still see him.
Right, because it has cat vision. Did you get to meet Clovis?
I did. There are many Clovises.
No, there's only one Clovis.
There are many cats later in the thing too.
There's so many cats in this movie, and I have to tell you, the most heartbreaking storyline in this entire movie for me was Clovis and the cop. Forgot his character name, so he's just gonna be cop. That was the most heartbreaking thing.
Why? What happened to Clovis?
No, it's the cop passes away, and he gets murdered by Charles, and then Clovis comes and lays on his chest and is like, meow, meow.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm not gonna cry. I'm strong. And now after Charles gets away, he goes home and is greeted by his mother lover. And he tries to feed her a little bit because she's hungry, right?
Yeah.
And then they get it on.
The sex scene, you see them as humans in the room, and then in the mirror, their reflections, they're the cat creatures. It was done in the old school way of, that's not a mirror, that's an opening in the wall that's framed to look like a mirror. And there's Karen Malkus and Mike McKay in creature suits laying in a bed.
Humping.
Inside the mirror window. And Alice and Brian laying in a bed on the other side, and they were matching what they were doing. But it was hilarious because Karen and Mike could barely hear any of us, and we're trying to tell them what to do.
Yeah. Is that where it's also portion of the set is duplicated? Mm-hmm. And that's really cool. I honestly think that sells a lot better than digital.
Like, yeah. I mean, as long as the the timing was coordinated with the action or whatever. But they do it in a lot of films a lot of times where it's super effective, where you're not supposed to see something in a reflection, or somebody's a vampire and they pick up something and move it in the reflection, it moves, but there's no person there. Yeah, and it's just the same toy on a wire connected to the one they pick up or whatever.
Yeah, they're not glowing while they're having sex, by the way.
Well, they were glowing between them, and you can see it referenced
under
there.
Under the bed, I see. Yeah, and then there's Karen and what's his name?
Mike McKay.
Okay, yeah. This is hilarious.
But there was a glow between Allison and Brian in the bed, too. It doesn't really read.
Yeah, it's like it's coming from a little bit like from the bed rather like than between them.
Yeah.
Which is like, how do you do
and
that?
And again, this is back, now it would just be a digital effect and they put it wherever they want. But yeah. Back then, it's like, how do you get the light between?
Stick a bunch of glow of sticks to her body.
Yeah, so this was the solution. I think the bed
glows.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny because I have a lot of behind the scenes footage from Sleepwalkers, and I've seen so much of this behind the scene footage, and I finally just watched this movie.
Oh.
In full. I have the behind the scenes of Karen and Mike on the bed trying to figure out how to have fake have sex. And I thought they were just messing around because I had never seen the movie. So I was like, that's hilarious and also maybe inappropriate. And then I was like, oh, they're just like literally doing their job.
They're just rehearsing, yeah.
Just rehearsing, because never in my wildest dreams did I think that there were going to be two cat people having sex in this movie.
Yeah.
But there are.
And they have big animatronic heads on. And it's like, where do I put my hands? Can you see me? No. Can I see you? No. So we kind of had to like pose them and
tell them to kind of like move. Probably like a little uncomfortable in those suits, but they're troopers.
Yeah.
After they have sex, Machen, aka Tanya, prepares for her date with Charles to go to the cemetery to do the gravestone rubbings because she likes.
That's her hobby.
That's her hobby. Love a good hobby. And while that's happening, Charles is getting ready for the date. And he has this wound from, I believe, the car door that slammed on him earlier. And that was your prosthetic. And she stitches it up.
Yeah. And it's just a prosthetic on Brian Krause's wrist that Alice Krieg could really stitch. She just had to be careful. So she's actually really putting a needle through it with real thread and really stitching it up. So she has to be really careful.
Because she might poke him.
Yeah.
Under the prosthetic.
So she was really good.
Yeah, it's a little thin thread so that you can see it, but it's not thick.
It's not obvious.
Is that foam?
That's all there was back then.
That's awful.
Foam prosthetics, foam bodysuits.
That's awful to have to work with. Great work from you and your team, to clarify. Okay, so Tanya comes over and the mom susses her out for dinner and gives her the rose to put behind her ear. And she takes it with her to the cemetery.
And then when they're in the cemetery, they're like making out and stuff like that. And he tries to assault her. She gets back at him and he starts to change, obviously. She freaks out and she grabs a corkscrew and jams it in his eye. So we had a version of the prosthetic that was his normal creature face. And then we had one with a wounded eye that had a little plate in it that we could put like half a corkscrew in that she could pull out. And when they turned the movie in for the first rating, there were a couple of things that got in an X rating, not the sex scene, as I recall, but the violent stuff. And one of them was him pulling the corkscrew out of his eye because it comes out and makes a lot of noise. And we had all this stuff that pulled out as well. And there was an actual like gooey eyeball on the very end of the corkscrew when it comes out. And it's just like literally a ball of goo because it's all bloody. And the MPAA said, you got to get rid of that.
They had to cut out the gooey eyeball so that it wasn't an X.
They had to shorten that whole thing out and they eliminated that. And then there's a scene later where Alice Krieg goes after Ron Perlman as the sheriff and breaks his arm and twists it behind his back. But before that, she'd bitten off some of his fingers.
Uh-huh.
And there was a shot, the bite and the reveal and him holding the hand up and there being blood and no fingers was fine. Alice turning her head and spitting the fingers out, they're like, that has to go. That's an X.
That's an X rating, is spitting fingers out?
Yeah, so that is, I believe, is eliminated.
But two cat creatures having sex is not fine. X. That's totally fine. Is that also because of the time period, 1992? Because I'm sure we've seen
far I think worse. The MPAA is different every year or decade.
That's so interesting that it's just these like short little things that had to come out because of the rating.
It almost looks like a punch now.
But she's kind of holding the bit of the goop on the end of the corkscrew.
Yeah.
That's so funny. I was actually wondering in the edit, because she goes, it's a shot of her going with the corkscrew, and then we don't see it go in, but you could have very well had it go in, and you did shoot it going into the prosthetic.
She had a handle of the corkscrew. So she, you know, there was the full one, and then there was the handle, and she punches in with the handle. And then we had one that was partial and had all the goo and slime on it that she could pull out. And all that stuff would string into his eye socket.
Man, that would have been really fun to see. Director's cut. Director's cut, Mick Garris.
It's out there somewhere.
I would love to see some goopy eyeballs.
Along with Alice Craig spitting fingers.
Yeah, I also want to see some spitting fingers. Yes, and then...
the police officer shows up.
And Machen runs out of the cemetery after just being physically assaulted, not sexually assaulted, by the Catman, Charles. And she's like, help, help, you got to help me. There's a crazy Catman trying to kill me. And he's like, what? You just need to calm down, little lady. She doesn't, though, because she almost died. And womp, 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 in comes Charles with, I don't know what this weapon of choice is, actually. I would love to... No, it kind of looks like a pencil. Oh, it is. It's the pencil from their grave rubbings.
Yeah, stabs him in the air with a pencil.
And then he lands on it. That's pretty great.
Yeah, and then it goes in further.
Tries to get Machen again.
The cat saves the day.
But Clovis comes in and I think jumps on him and really scratches his face good.
Yeah, and we built we had like a stunt Clovis, and it was a cat that was a rod puppet, and it had rods out that elbows basically of the front legs so that we could claw at his face, and then we had another rod through the body and to the head where we could turn the head and then the mouth open and closed.
Wow.
So we could move it around and have it claw at him. And then the idea too was that when it was clawing, it was creating smoke. They were like steaming and smoking. So there was like a rig on Brian. So all those shots were more elaborate. Then there was like a stunt cat that could be thrown.
And basically the actor just catches the stunt
puppet cat. Yeah, and then there's like a posable one that we could do whatever we want with. And then like that's the fake.
That looks so good, Dad.
Yeah.
I was watching that and I was really like. Well.
I mean, with all this stuff, it comes down to how you edit it.
Yeah.
Because if you show it for too long, it becomes very apparent as to what it is. But they did a great job editing the scene. And then there's just so much other suspense going on with Machen on the radio and stuff like that. It sort of keeps the energy in the scene going. And then there's all the reactions of like the cat and the noises the cat makes and then the steam and everything else. So there's a lot to mess with.
A lot of elements. Clovis really like gets in there and fucks him up real good.
Yeah.
Clovis almost kills him. And then the sheriff dies and Clovis goes and sits on his chest, a little bloody Clovis. And he's so sad his owner's dead and it makes me want to cry.
He's just looking at the trainer.
I know, but in reality, he's sad because his owner died.
But I thought that the cop got a corn cob.
There is a corn cob later.
Isn't it the same guy?
No, it's a different cob.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right. Oh, and see, now that all the cats are starting to show up at the house because they know who's inside the house.
They know.
And they want to get in there. And that's why the mom doesn't leave. That's why she's sort of stuck in the house.
But he leaves.
He goes out and does the hunting, basically.
Oh, so this makes sense now. Because something I was a little confused about was she kept talking about how hungry she was. But I was like, why can't she go outside? Because he's outside. But if you think of the traditional, like, stereotype old ways of, like, masculine and feminine roles is like men were hunter-gatherers hunters and the women were gatherers. So that checks out in that area.
Well, it's supposed to kind of be like cats, like a
cat.
The lion and the lioness. One finds the food and brings it back. And in real life, it's usually the female one that does the hunting. And the guys are lazy.
Yeah.
And you then heard in it this here. One, the guy goes out and does the hunting for the female. And then this makeup, when he's like dying and he comes back in, there's a whole big chest piece with wounds from the cat. And then there's a stage of makeup for the head where he's losing the ability to hold the human disguise together.
Oh.
And you're starting to see the reveal. He's got less control, basically. So you're starting to see more of the cat creature come out. But because he's wounded and messed up physically and mentally at this point, that gave us license to sort of mess with the anatomy and make it sort of this transitional phase where it's not working quite right. So his anatomy is messed up and all his wounds are leaky and mom's trying to save him and it's not really going so well.
She's trying to patch up those leaky wounds. She uses this little scrub-a-dub-dub in a jar and she's applying it to Charles'
wounds. Yeah, it's
supposed
to be some like funky salve that they keep with them that works for them. Yeah. There's a whole like, lore. Mick added this whole thing in the beginning with the whole lore of the cat creature and all that that helped explain and set up a lot of the stuff too. And that was part of what he created and added to Stephen King's
I buy that.
Script.
They figure out, I mean, they're magic already, so they figure out what works for them to help them heal faster. And then the mom applies some of that, you know,
it's like a salve. It's supposed to be like a healing salve.
Yeah, she applies Aquaphor and it saves it. It's like a tattoo. No, she puts it on this big wound on his chest and it like bubbles and foams. So you see it's working. That's cool. How'd you do that?
That's just Alka-Seltzer. And
oh, right. Just Alka-Seltzer.
You know.
Just sponsored by Alka-Seltzer.
Old school stuff.
Look, Alka-Seltzer, if you want to sponsor us for future movies where we can do burns and things like that.
We can give
that.
You some product placement. We can talk about the blob, Alka-Seltzer trick.
Exactly. If you'd like to have product placement here, we're for it. Okay, so this is all safe. You could have licked it up if you wanted to.
Yeah.
She could have licked his wounds, literally.
Calm your stomach at the same time.
Alka-Seltzer. Da-da-da-da.
But see, like that makeup is more like messed up and then it's got like weird puffy eyes and stuff too. So
I see.
We're trying to show the illness as well as the inability to hold his form. And then there's a further stage of this when he's further along and it literally covers his whole head and changes everything.
That's when he's dead and dancing with her. It's really fucked up. Oh, also there's this song, the song that they play for when they dance. This song went viral on TikTok like crazy. And I have it saved on my phone. I forgot the actual title of it, but I'll like put it.
Is it like Erica?
Not the theme of Sleepwalkers.
Right.
And I always thought, wow, that'd be so cool if that would be put in a horror movie. And little did I know, it's in this movie.
From
1992. And it's like, bow, bow, bow. I'll play a little bit of it.
Bow, 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 bow. Oh, there's John Landis. There's Stephen King.
Oh, yes. Wait, hold on. Let me get a little.
They're investigating.
Let me segue. So the mom tends to Charles' wounds, sponsored by Alka-Seltzer. And then it cuts to this investigation scene.
Outside the cemetery where they found the sheriff's body. And there's the grave owner, I think, is what Stephen King is playing. And then Toby Hooper is like a forensic scientist picking up evidence.
Oh, this is Toby Hooper.
Uh-huh.
He kind of looks like John Landis.
Yeah, well, round glasses and shaggy hair and beards were kind of
John Landis.
The thing of the day.
Yeah, we get this little scene with a crap ton of cameos, and Machen explains to the cops what was happening and how she almost died and how his face wasn't a human face, and they kind of clocked that's something that the cop who had died had said, was that the man had no face. So that's good investigation.
They got everything they need.
Yeah, they really came and conquered that investigation. And he tells the one sheriff, there's so many sheriffs, sorry everybody listening, there's so many sheriffs, but the one sheriff tells the other sheriff to not leave Machen, aka Tanya, out of his sight. So he takes her home. And that's where he dies later. Meanwhile, back at Charles's house, his mom is still tending to him and the police are coming. And so she uses her powers and her energy to disguise the car and both of them so that when the sheriffs all bust down, the door and invade the home, they're not there. They're still investigating the property, and then they intercut back to Tanya's house. At Tanya's house, there's the sheriff and her parents while she's in the bubble bath. And in the time that she takes that bubble bath to the time she goes downstairs, everybody dies. It's wild because the mom just shows up with a bunch of flowers and she's like, hey, I'm sorry my son assaulted your daughter. Please accept these roses. And then she slaps him with the roses.
And then she basically tries to take him out.
Yeah.
And she does a great job.
Yeah. Oh, the glass was there, prosthetic on the guy's cheek. He gets slapped with these roses that also yeah. have a vase, so it gets shattered into his face. Was that you guys?
I think so.
It looks good.
I remember that Allison, the stunt person, had to do all this in heels. Oh. They had to fight, and then I believe they had to pick up one of the characters and carry them over yes. their shoulder yes. in heels.
Alice again. Picks up Machen yeah. in her heels. And it's just like, la-di-da.
Just very impressive.
That's wild.
All the stunt people in this were amazing. Charlie Crowell was the stunt coordinator, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I know he was the stunt double for a lot of the cat effects and the burns and stuff like that because he's about 5 foot.
Oh, four, that makes sense.
He coordinated a lot of this and just these people went the extra mile. It was nice.
Yeah, the mom gets thrown out of a little first story window. It's a nice break. And then Machen and Alice have their fight.
Just pretty one-sided.
Yeah, I should say. Well, you know, Machen gets a scratch in there. And then meanwhile, back at the lab, the photo lab, John Landis is there.
And Joe Dante.
And Joe Dante.
And then in the with the blonde hair, the dispatch person is Cynthia Garris, Mick's wife.
Oh, my goodness.
So
they all discover the photos are weird. Charles's face is off. And so they get a call from the one cop that's at Machen's house, and the mom picks up a corn cob and stabs him in the back.
Yeah.
And then she says something about, like, no vegetables. Like, that's on you for not having vegetables or something weird.
And there's a cop kebab line in there at some point, too, I believe.
Ah, yeah. So she stabs him with a corn cob. Honestly, if this was
through
like...
Through the back. Through
and
the spine.
That's how he dies. Corn cob in the back.
Mm-hmm.
How... In this one scene, Alice, the cat mom, comes out and drags Machen across the front lawn. And it looks like...
She's pulling her out of harness.
Oh, because she's... Okay, well, she's doing a very good job of being limp. I literally thought that was like a really good body that okay. was made.
So this is Alice responding to Ron Perlman. She grabs his hand, bites his fingers off. That's his real hand. She bites it. And then we had a prosthetic on his hand for the reveal. And then we had a whole fake arm that had that hand that she could twist, and the bone actually comes through the skin and the arm breaks backwards, and then she takes that arm and heaves it up into his head and knocks him out with his own arm.
Oh my God, yeah. If you pause it, you can see the bone come out of the arm.
It breaks the skin, yeah.
Yeah, it's really quick.
And it's really well lit. You see the hair on the arm is backlit. Everything they did just help make it look real. And then the sound people did an awesome job as well.
She smacks him with his own broken arm.
And then he just falls out of frame. And that's kind of the end of him.
We got corn kebab death, broken arm, ripped off fingers death. So basically, one by one, these cops and the parents are just going down like flies. And then Alice, the cat mom, takes Machen, hoists her up over her shoulder in the heels, which I assume is a stunt woman.
Yeah.
And then keeps shooting at people, messes up the cars. They explode, which is pretty rad.
She's a much better shot than the
sheriff.
Sheriffs are.
Well, she's technically much older.
Yes, true. She has more experience.
She's a more experienced woman, and we'll leave it at that. And then she steals the cop car. She and Machen kind of have this tug of war in the cop car because Machen comes to and is like, where are you taking me? And she's like, to my son that assaulted you.
They're just trying to get their food home.
Yeah.
This is such a hassle. All they want to do is get their meal home so they can eat. And the meal just keeps fighting back.
All they're trying to do is order for delivery, and they're having to go out and get it, and it's fighting them.
Yeah. And then, like, every time Alice gets mad, prosthetics go on her as well.
Yes.
And then this house, I mean, they had all the cats are like real cats on the roof and everything.
Yeah, they pull up to the back to the house. It's like incrementally over the whole movie, more and more cats are at it. And now that we're in like the finale, they come back. And it's this shot, like my dad was saying, is like there's so many cats on the roof of the house, on the porch, in the lawn. That's like 100 cats. That's like my dream life. Except for my allergies, I'd probably die.
Other than that, yeah.
Other than that, but look at all those cats. Oh my gosh, did you have a favorite?
No, I just felt bad for them because
they're all working sit girls
out there. And there were some fake ones thrown in there just to, you know, fill stuff out. The majority of it is all real cats. And then when we did the exterior here where they pull up to the house, that exterior is on the soundstage because there was also the fire burn and everything else.
That was about to come, yes. And they crash into the house with the
car. Well, they can't get in because there's all the cats in the yard, so she smashes through the door, and then cats start coming in, and she's
angry.
She's angry, so she's catching them and breaking their necks and throwing them.
Yeah, this one cat jumps. She catches the cat midair, breaks it with her hand, and throws it on the ground.
Yeah. She's a good catch.
Rude. Rude. No, Dad, not good catch. Poor kitty.
Fake cat.
But it's real to me. That's pretty baller. She just says, fuck you. And I just assume cat puppet because you had lots of them. And then cat mom.
Cat mom brings her back to Charles, who's almost dead at this point.
She says, dance with my baby.
And he's just in a full like torso and head prosthetic.
Yeah, this is like the worst like final stage of his deformity.
Yeah, I guess he is dead really.
Yeah.
She kind of reanimates him to dance with Tanya.
Yeah, so the mom is like, you should dance with my son. And then she uses her powers to levitate his corpse and throws it at Machen. And they like sway, dance, and it's very morbid for sure. But he kind of gets reanimated, Charles, through her kind of maybe giving him some power.
She gives him some of her energy, basically.
And so then it's kind of the same trick from earlier where he's actually alive and was just kind of playing dead. And then there's this great shot, the really, you know, grotesque kind of like dying Charles kind of gets some energy. You see him morph into more of like the final cat form, but still he has his eye gouged out. It's really cool.
True. It's his true form.
And so he morphs to his more true form. And Machen is like trying to understand what's happening. He opens his eyes.
He's got a lot of energy. He's sort of been re-energized by her. And then he tries to
suck her soul again.
Yeah.
And he has this great, that you can see the animatronics. That's my favorite shot. You can see the eyes, the ears wiggle. He opens his mouth with his fangs and he starts sucking her soul. And it's just, you can see all the work that was put into the head in that shot. It's really great. He can blink, all these things, and then he's trying to suck her soul, and then she gouges out his eyes again.
His only good eye.
Yeah. She gets both of them this time.
And Clovis is in the house, attacks mom.
Clovis comes to the rescue and attacks cat mom. Clovis gets tossed to the side. Oh, yeah, Clovis gets tossed to the side.
But the door's open, and now all the cats come in, and all the cats start attacking mom. So Alice Krieg and Stunt Double basically get fake cats thrown at them and mounted to their clothes and spin around and like stuff like that. It's like you're on it way too long. And then it's almost comedic because then when the sheriff shoots her, the bullet goes through her, the shotgun blast goes through her, and the cat goes flying off of her back.
Did you guys have to like pull it, or that's just what happened? Unaware. Oh my God. This shot where there's this one orange and white cat that's stuck to the mom's back as she's like trying to fight them off. And is this a puppet?
Yeah.
And this shot,
it's a stationary puppet.
But it like moves a little bit.
But they show it for so long.
I honestly, Dad, I bought it. Really? I thought that was a real cat. And I was honestly concerned for the cat's safety.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, what? Like, no.
No worries there. It just has a wobbly head. So when she moved, the head kind of moved around.
It worked in your favor. But it is really comical when she gets shot that the cat just blasts off into the wall.
I know.
Oh, my God. It's great.
So then she has a hole in her stomach, but she's going to still keep coming.
Yeah, so I guess, and then she morphs into full cat person.
Right, but she now has a hole in her stomach too.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
That was Karen.
That. This is my aunt.
And that's Mike McKay in the Charles creature suit.
Okay.
And then they try and escape, and they see the door open and close, but nothing comes out. Yet the cats react.
So something's happening.
And then these hands show up out of nowhere, and it's Brian's cat creature, which is Mike McKay.
Yes. And I have this behind the scenes footage of from my dad's shop. And my dad's actually trying to direct this shot to Mike of like how to come up, because it looked like it wasn't creepy enough, like the way that the hands were coming up. So my dad, like back in 91, whenever you guys were shooting this, is like, yeah, you got to go like this and like that with your hands. And like, it's an up and over situation. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, I finally got to see the shot that he was trying about to get Mike to understand, because they can't really see in the suits, you know?
Yeah.
So that's so funny. Yeah, and then Machen goes into the sheriff's car. She rolls up the window, but the cat mom keeps coming at her.
And that, I think, was Charlie Crowell doing the punching through the glass and all that.
Yeah, and Machen's arm gets cut on the glass. And then the sheriff throws a bear trap at the mom,
which snaps on the back of her head.
Yeah, and then cat mom drags in the sheriff from the bear claw and then hoists him up and lifts him up, and he falls onto the fence.
Yeah, she impales him on a picket fence.
Yeah,
and we had a dummy of him for that, obviously. A screaming dummy that lived on long after this film.
Really?
Yeah, and then all this stuff where the cats are attacking the creatures. Same thing, we're just attaching all these dummy cats to the to the suit. And the idea is the cats are tearing them apart, and that whole idea of that internal heat and stuff and the steam, it's supposed to be like so intense that they catch fire. All of a sudden the cats are like burning from the inside out. And
not the cats, the cat person.
The cat creature, creature. And then it's Charlie in a full burn rig in the creature suit.
Wow. And then the cats kind of just like watch on, like, yeah, we did that.
And that, I remember where you see the cat pop up and it looks like Alice briefly.
Yes.
This again was the beginning of VFX. So they were like, you know, trying to figure it out, like the compositing of flames. And do we have the cat suit, or do we have like a black dummy that we soak in gasoline or kerosene so that it burns, but we get the form and then we can overlap? And then this whole thing in the driveway where the body falls, it was supposed to be the both of the cats together, and they ended up with one holding the other, sort of like Madonna and Child kind of pose.
Oh my gosh.
And they melt, and their skeletons are revealed, and we built these giant gelatin puppets.
No way.
Of both suits. And we did this whole version that was animatronic that melted. And while it's melting, they could move and collapse. And then we sculpted this version that was the two of their bodies melted together as like this weird big art piece on the floor that was supposed to be the final image of what was left of them. But they really liked doing this slow motion thing with the flames and all that instead. So they cut out all of the dummy body stuff.
So wait, so Charles and her were supposed to die together?
Uh-huh.
But how, so he gets back, like then he would have gotten back up and come outside.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a whole, so basically they cut out like part of a scene.
Yeah.
That was actually shot. You guys shot all that?
Yeah. Yeah. We went and we melted it all. Yeah. So we'd done like their skeletons, sort of like in the end of Gremlins where the one gremlin gets the water on him and you see the skeleton and the skin.
Yeah.
Like falling away, but there's still a skull and everything. It was kind of that sort of a look, but it was all like all the colors of their bodies were kind of smeared together, like melted paint or crayons kind of. It was pretty artistic. It's something worth pulling out, actually.
Give us a director's cut, McGarris.
Yeah. I don't know if they ever did anything with that footage where they could even edit it for a director's cut.
Aww.
But I think they went back to that music in the end, and the idea of the music and the fire against the dark background. That was more back to the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, because by then it's not about her and Charles. It's about Machen.
Yeah.
Tanya. It's about Tanya.
And that was pretty much it. So lots of stuff.
Lots of stuff. I feel like we kind of just dove into, like, we get kind of just chronologically, we're like, yes, this happens and that happens, and didn't really like dive into the specificity of it. But I would love to revisit Sleepwalkers with my aunt, Karen, and she can talk about what it was like to perform in that suit, how it was like trying to go to the bathroom on set, what it was like trying to see out of the black eyes. Ice scrims, and also what it was like to fake have cat sex with Mike. I think it'll be really fun. And also then my dad can do a little deeper dive into just how the suit came to life. And I mean, it is a foam suit. So we can talk about how, that worked back at the day. But at least this is an overview of Sleepwalkers, and we can dive in a little bit down the road.
Yeah. And maybe we can pull the photos of the stuff that's didn't make it into the final scenes.
Do you have photos?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Where are these photos? We could share those.
I think they're in our files. I mean, I think we saved everything.
Okay.
We could.
Well, we'll take a deep dive into the files.
We might have some of the original paint job photos too.
Oh, that'd be really cool to see, everybody. Be sure to follow my dad's Instagram, his shop Instagram, Alterian Inc. Then we can post things there, and there are behind the scenes things on that. But
yeah.
We just wanted to say thank you for listening to this episode. It was a little all over the place because neither of us have had a lot of spare time, and that's because I am gearing up to film my first feature film, narrative feature film, in about a month. So my apologies that there will not be an episode for June. I'll be shooting, and there was just no way to be able to do two things at the same time. And my lovely father is going to help us fake kill some people. So we're both kind of gearing up for that. But thank you for staying with us on this little unhinged episode of Sleepwalkers. We really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Wait, Dad just says thanks. Is there anything you want to add?
No, I think that's it, really. It's pretty much a testament to the time period it was filmed. Everything was practical more than anything else. And you can tell that digital effects were just starting to get figured out. And it's interesting to see stuff from even a year later as to how much progress was made. But
that's
films
true.
Like this are where people kind of learned what was possible.
Trying to figure out all that out, it was really hard. I can't even imagine. Well, thanks for listening. And we'll see you in about...
2 months?
2 months. Bye.
Bye.